The last time I was here, Paul had a quiz on Sunday afternoon, and it was about the Herod family. Very interesting quiz. And because of that, I thought it might be appropriate to talk a little bit about that family this morning, give us a little supplementary information about the Herod family. I brought along a little chart that I hope a couple of guys will help pass out for me. It's right here. Should be enough for everybody here. Thank you, guys. It's a very simple chart of a few members of the Herod family that I hope will help as we talk about some of these people. They had a lot to do with the New Testament story. Tom read for us from the second chapter of the book of Matthew, where a couple of these people are mentioned. There's one man that I'll mention, and before you even get the chart, that he's not on the chart. He was the father of Herod the Great. His name was Herod Antipater. He's not mentioned in the New Testament, and he's not shown on the chart. But 10 of his descendants played major roles in the lives of Jesus and the apostles in one way or another. So those 10 are the ones that I'd like to talk with you about this morning, primarily those 10. The Herod family were Idumeans. They were descended from Esau. They were descended from Abraham through Isaac and Esau rather than through Isaac and Jacob. But they saw themselves as Jewish. Their ancestors had not gone to Egypt with Joseph. They had not returned with Moses and Joshua. Nevertheless, these people saw themselves as Jewish. I hope to convey some of this Herod history because as we conclude this morning in a few minutes, I want to make a point about the opportunities that these people had and how they let those opportunities slip by, just like we can let our opportunities slip by. Thanks for passing those out, guys. I hope everybody has a copy of this little chart. If you've ever looked at a complete genealogical chart of the Herod family, you know just how complicated and confusing it is. I wouldn't dream of passing one of those out to you for a 30-minute lesson. It would be easier to explain a lot of our extended families than it would the Herod family. So we leave out a lot, but I just want to cover a little information about these 10 pertinent people. They're not even all on the chart themselves. I'll tell you why later. Herod Antipater, who was the father of Herod the Great, was the one who was formerly converted to the Jewish religious practices that were carried on by the descendants of Jacob. His family, the family that we see on this chart, would not allow their portraits to be placed on coins that they issued because that would be issuing a graven image. They would not eat pork. The women of the family were not allowed to marry uncircumcised men. So they had these things in common with Judaism. But the Herod family followed Roman social customs. They frequently traveled to Rome. They commissioned buildings to be built in the Roman architectural style. Herod the Great sent his sons to live in the household of Octavian in Rome. Now, Octavian was the one who later on became Caesar Augustus. He was just as Roman could be. And Herod's sons received their formal educations there in the city of Rome. Members of this family sponsored athletic games in the Greek style. These games, of course, were offensive to the Jews. The members of the Herod family also arranged marriages between uncles and nieces within the family after the Roman fashion. Herod the Great undertook tremendous building projects in the Promised Land, including complete cities like Caesarea by the Sea and the Masada, and he completely rebuilt the city of Jericho as well. He rebuilt, famously, the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. He deeply offended the Jews when he rebuilt that temple by placing an eagle, which was the emblem of Roman rule, on the gates of the temple. In fact, one of the last acts of the life of Herod the Great was overseeing the execution of the Jews who tore that eagle down, which he had placed on the temple gates. In the second chapter of the book of Matthew, which Tom read, we see that the wise men from the east came and asked Herod the Great where the king of the Jews was to be born. Herod was very deeply disturbed about this because he himself felt that he had earned the title king of the Jews. The Romans had given him this title because he had been able to inveigle himself into the good graces of the Caesars. And Herod the Great was planning for one of his sons to inherit this title king of the Jews from him. He learned, though, that the real king of the Jews was to be born at Bethlehem, which was the site of one of Herod's summer palaces. Herod the Great, therefore, as we saw in that chapter, slaughtered the boys of the city of Bethlehem who were under the age of 2, and Joseph and Mary then took Jesus to safety in Egypt. Herod the Great at this time had been seriously ill for a long time. From the description in Josephus, he had gangrene, he had severe itching, he had convulsions and ulcers, and his feet were covered with tumors, he had continual fevers. Recently, a modern doctor studied Herod's symptoms and concluded that he suffered from tertiary syphilis, among other complications. A little later, when Herod the Great actually lay dying in his opulent palace at Jericho, he had the stadium at Jericho filled with beloved and important people from all around the Promised Land, because Herod had ordered that at the moment of his own death, these important Jews from the whole Promised Land were to be killed. The very moment his death was announced, they were to all be killed. And he did this to make sure that the people of the Promised Land mourned when he died. It didn't seem to matter that they wouldn't be mourning for him. They'd be mourning for these other people. But he wanted the whole land to be filled with mourning when he died. So as he lay on his deathbed about 4 BC, Herod's thoughts may have turned to these rabbis and students that he had recently executed for tearing down those Roman eagles in the temple gates because it violated God's laws against images. He may have reflected on the 2 sons that he had with his beloved wife Miriam, sons that he had had drowned in the swimming pool there of his palace, which lay next door to where he was laying. He could have remembered the execution of his favorite son, Antipater, only a few days before, because he believed that Antipater was plotting against him. Antipater had been the one who was supposed to be called the king of the Jews in his father's place, but now Antipater was dead because his father killed him. One time, Octavian, who became Caesar Augustus, is supposed to have remarked that it's better to be Herod's swine than his son, because Herod wouldn't eat pork. That was against the rules. So his swine would live, but his sons were killed by their father. Maybe Herod thought about the 45 members of the Sanhedrin whom he had murdered, or the hundreds of family and staff whom he had suspected of plotting against him, or the thousands of the subjects who had died in his brutal campaigns to claim a country that they believed he had no right to rule. And maybe he even remembered the massacre of the babies when he tried to kill Jesus. However that may be, as he lay dying there in Jericho, Herod revised his will to reflect the execution of his son Antipater. And in that will, he left a lot of things to 3 of the sons that I have mentioned on this chart here. Archelaus, his son by Malthasi, his Samaritan wife, was given the best territory. That was Judea, Samaria, and Idumea. Herod Philip, also mentioned on the chart, was a son of Miriam, and he was to rule the area northeast of the Sea of Galilee. And Herod Antipas, who is mentioned in the Bible, and there are some scriptures listed under his name there, another son of Malthasi, was given Galilee and Perea. Shortly after completing this will, Herod the Great died and was buried with pomp and circumstance in the Herodium, overlooking the fields of Bethlehem. Through most of my adult life, there has always been a mystery about exactly where Herod's body was buried. When I was in Israel years ago, about 30 years ago, more than that actually now, I think, quite a bit more than that now, we drove by the Herodium and we discussed the possibility that Herod might be buried there. He's supposed to be buried there, but the tomb was being looked for at that time. Josephus said that Herod the Great was buried in the Herodium. He tells us how Herod's body was laid out in purple grave clothes on a bier of gold, decorated with precious gems, wearing a diadem of gold on his head with a gold crown above that and holding a scepter in his hand. He had been the king of Judea for over 35 years. The funeral procession included Herod's surviving children and his other relatives and his personal bodyguard and the rest of the army. 500 personal servants and freedmen carried funeral spices. This procession carried the bier for more than 25 miles to Herod's fortified palace at the Herodium, which had been specifically designed to do double duty as a royal residence and then as a mausoleum after Herod died. And it is there that Herod was buried. But in spite of very extensive excavations at the Herodium, No body, no artifacts, no evidence of grave robbery, no tomb, no trace of his burial was found until the year 2007. There was a professor of archaeology at Hebrew University by the name of Ehud Netzer, who made Herod's burial place a special concern of his many years ago. He started looking for Herod's body about 1972. And finally, after 35 years of searching for it, the grave and the sarcophagus and the mausoleum were found on the Herodium's northeastern slope, exactly where Josephus said they were in the first place. This was announced on May the 7th, 2007. So we haven't known about it for very long. The sarcophagus had been broken into, and it was actually in hundreds of pieces when Netzer found it. The monument had been destroyed. It's thought that this destruction was done during the Jewish revolt and the Roman reaction to it during the war of 66 to 72 AD. Those Jewish rebels were known for their hatred of Herod and everything that he stood for as a puppet ruler of the Romans, so they're probably the ones that destroyed his tomb and made it harder to find. After the funeral of their father, Herod's sons went to Rome to ask for additional lands. A delegation from Judea and Jerusalem that was fed up with the Herod dynasty also went to Rome to request that Herod appoint somebody else to govern them. The Jews rioted in Jerusalem in order to restore order in the Promised Land. The Romans crucified more than 2,000 Jews. And to the great disappointment of nearly everybody, Augustus honored Herod's will. The land would belong to Herod's three sons, even though none of them was called king of the Jews. Nobody was king of the Jews except the one who had been born to be and who had been appointed by God to be. Archelaus was made an ethnarch, which was a position slightly higher than a tetrarch, which his brothers received. This was about 4 BC, and Joseph and Mary learned this news in a dream that Tom read about in Matthew 2, verses 19 through 23. They are dead which sought the young child's life. Herod the Great is dead. You can go back to the Promised Land. Archelaus ruled in Jerusalem for 10 years. He hunted down the delegation that had gone to Rome, and as a true son of his father, he executed them and all of their families and confiscated their property. Archelaus had all of his father's evil qualities, and his reign was as bloody as his father's had been. When Joseph and Mary were told by God that Herod was dead, they came back to Judea, but they heard about Archelaus and decided they wouldn't risk facing another bloodthirsty Herod's fear of losing his throne. We read about this in Matthew 2:22. So they skirted his territory, and this is the reason that they settled in Nazareth under the rule of Herod Antipas, and then fulfilled the prophecy that Jesus would be called a Nazarene, Matthew 2:23. In 6 AD, another delegation of Judeans risked their lives and went to Rome to accuse Archelaus of breaking the emperor's command to govern them peacefully. Archelaus was summoned to Rome, and then he was exiled to Gaul, and he completely disappeared from history at that point. So he was disciplined by the Romans because of his poor rule of the Jews. But people did not soon forget the cruel Archelaus, and years later, the bloody beginnings of his reign seems to have provided the basis for the very clever and somewhat dangerous parable that Jesus gave in Luke chapter 19, verses 11 through 27. I'm not going to take the time to refer to that because we don't have time. But Jesus there seems to be referring to something that Archelaus had done. Judea, Samaria, and Idumea were named the Roman province of Judea in order to be subject directly to Rome under a military prefect. Caponius was appointed as the first prefect. Pontius Pilate famously came later. Judea no longer at that point then gave allegiance to the Herod family. Jesus would conduct his Galilean ministry under the watchful eye of Archelaus' younger brother, Herod Philip. Now, Herod Philip received the territory north and east of the Sea of Galilee. This was an area that was large, but it was fairly poor. Philip was a peace-loving tetrarch. He was an excellent administrator and a just ruler, which was very unusual in the Herod family. The majority of Philip's subjects were Gentiles, which spared him the burden of having to deal with the internal struggles of the various Jewish peoples, and he continued the continual appearance of one self-proclaimed Jewish Messiah after another was not his concern, mainly because most of his people were Gentiles. Philip established his capital at Caesarea Philippi, and he expanded what was a largely pagan town into a place where many gods could be and were worshipped. Later on, Jesus specifically took his disciples to Caesarea Philippi to impress on them the reality that his church was going to become the most important community in the world. That's where he said, "Upon this rock I will build my church." When I was there years ago at Caesarea Philippi, all along the rock wall were little idol niches that were carved into that wall. And it was in this pagan setting that Peter confessed that Jesus was the Messiah. Herod Philip married his niece Herodias. Their daughter Salome was a noted dancer, according to his brother in Matthew 14, verses 1 through 12. After a reign of 37 peaceful years, Philip died and was buried at a city that he had built named Julius that was at or near the site of Bethsaida. The rule of his half-brother, Herod Antipas, wasn't nearly as peaceful. Antipas was the only Herod to meet the Messiah, and that's one reason I particularly wanted to discuss him. Antipas is remembered as an outstanding ruler who brought peace and prosperity to his land for more than 40 years. His territories of Galilee and Perea were among the most religious territories in Israel. Antipas tried to avoid offending his Jewish subjects by refusing to mint coins with images on them. Both the Pharisees and the Herodians supported Herod Antipas. The Herodians probably were formed during the reign of Herod Antipas. Just 3 miles from Nazareth, Antipas built the magnificent city of Sepphoris, which functioned as his capital. The boy Jesus, while he was growing up at Nazareth, almost certainly watched Sepphoris as it was being built on a hill just north of his hometown. It's very possible that Jesus even worked there at Sepphoris as a boy, because carpenters from the whole area were hired to go work there and build that town, contributing to the construction of Sepphoris. Herod Antipas's greatest construction project was the city of Tiberias on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. Construction was made there near hot springs. It was one of the most beautiful cities in Galilee and still is a beautiful city today. It had the best of everything, including a stadium and hot baths and a great palace. The religious Jews of the area were unwilling to enter into Tiberias because it was supposedly built over a cemetery and therefore was defiled according to Old Testament law, Numbers chapter 5, verse 2. Tiberias was completed probably shortly before Jesus moved to Capernaum, which was a town just a few miles away. You can see Capernaum from Tiberias and vice versa. Tiberias was clearly visible. According to the New Testament, Antipas was a scheming weakling who was the archenemy of Jesus. Antipas had married the daughter of a Nabatean king named Aretas. During a visit to his brother Philip, Antipas fell in love with Herodias, who was Philip's wife. So Antipas divorced his wife and married his brother's wife while Philip was still alive. Since this was forbidden in the law, in Leviticus chapter 18, verse 16, Antipas incurred the bitter opposition of the Jews that he ruled, including a desert preacher whose name was John, and we refer to him often as John the Baptist, whose mission was to prepare the way of the Lord. John the Baptist's harsh criticism of Antipas struck a nerve in the Herod family. Antipas arrested John the Baptist and imprisoned him. On Antipas' birthday, Herodias' daughter Salome, who would later marry Herod Philip II, danced provocatively and obtained Antipas' favor. Her mother, Herodias, encouraged Salome to ask for John's execution because she was tired of being publicly criticized by John the Baptist. So Antipas really was trapped here by this request, and he probably was not entirely sober on his birthday at the time he made this decision, but he concurred with this and he had John the Baptist beheaded. This event was to haunt Antipas for the rest of his life. The Jewish people loved John the Baptist. They hated Antipas. Antipas, believing that John was a genuine prophet, feared the consequences of having murdered him until nearly the end of his life. And to make matters worse, his divorced wife fled to her father, King Aretas, who declared war on his unfaithful son-in-law. So Antipas was defeated in this war. Caligula sent an army to rescue him. Caligula was the emperor of Rome, sent an army to rescue Antipas and protect his kingdom. But this was the beginning of his loss of Roman support. Antipas's ungodly marriage eventually led to his downfall, despite the execution of his critic. The execution of John the Baptist brought opposition from a greater Jewish rabbi, Jesus Christ himself. Antipas was the only member of the Herod family to come face to face with Jesus Christ. His father, Herod the Great, had lived close to Jesus' birthplace and had even searched for Jesus as a baby, but Herod the Great never actually met Jesus. Philip lived only a few miles from the area where most of Jesus' miracles were performed, but there's no record of those two men ever meeting. Antipas, on the other hand, spent years trying to meet Jesus and finally had an opportunity to do so. After John the Baptist's murder, Herod Antipas and Jesus were in constant opposition to each other. Jesus criticized Antipas by name, calling him that fox, which was the cultural equivalent of calling him a wimp back in those days. Jesus actually didn't refer too many times to political type things, but he did call Herod Antipas that fox. When the two men finally did meet in the courtroom where Jesus was on trial for his life, Jesus refused to even speak to Antipas. Antipas mocked him, Antipas abused him, and Antipas missed the opportunity for salvation. Antipas, even though he met Jesus, was no better off than his father and his brothers who never met the Lord. He feared that Jesus was John the Baptist whom he had murdered, raised from the dead. Nevertheless, he plotted Jesus' death too. Jesus' execution proved to be far more earth-shattering than John the Baptist had been, but Antipas didn't live long enough to learn about that. At least he didn't live long enough on earth to learn about it while he was still on earth. Throughout most of his life, Antipas had the support of Tiberius, the Roman emperor, for whom the title of the city of Tiberias was named. When Tiberius died, Antipas' rival and relative, Herod Agrippa I, who is also on the little chart I gave you, Agrippa was Herod the Great's grandson, as I hope is clear from the chart, accused Tiberius of plotting. Tiberius died. Antipas' rival, Herod Agrippa I, accused Antipas of plotting against Rome. Caligula, the new emperor, exiled Antipas and claimed his property. At that point, Herod Antipas also passed quietly from history, and we don't hear about him anymore. Herod the Great had loved his wife Miriam quite a lot. When he had her executed because she supposedly had a extramarital affair, his grief knew no bounds, even though it was he himself who had executed her. He was a little bit crazy in this way. Yet he also executed her son, Aristobulus, who's not mentioned in the New Testament, and he did this without a second thought. Ironically, her grandson, Herod Agrippa I, continued the Herod dynasty. Herod Agrippa I governed the territory that had formerly belonged to Philip, the area north and east of the Sea of Galilee, from about 37 to 41 A.D., and was king of Judea from 41 to 44 A.D., While in Rome for his education, Agrippa became friends with Caligula, who was emperor during the time that Agrippa was in power and was a great supporter of Agrippa. When Caligula died, the new emperor Claudius continued to support Agrippa, and for a little while, Agrippa's territory was almost equal with that of his grandfather, Herod the Great. He's the only one that came close to equaling the territory that was ruled by his grandfather. Agrippa knew about Jesus Christ. He determined that the followers of Jesus, his uncle Antipas's nemesis, must be stopped. Agrippa killed the apostle James, as we read in Acts chapter 12, and he also imprisoned Peter and others. Agrippa's frustration must have been as great as Antipas's was, because Peter disappeared from jail after Agrippa put him in there. Proving that he was a full-blooded Herod, Agrippa had the guards executed for letting Peter escape. Later, Agrippa went to Caesarea to celebrate a festival in honor of the emperor Claudius. Receiving the adulation of the admiring crowds, Agrippa let it go to his head. He was struck down in pride, a victim of the pride of the Herod family. Herod Agrippa met Jesus' disciples and heard the gospel. His son Herod Agrippa II did also. Herod Agrippa II was 17 years old when his father died in Caesarea after 5 days of severe pain. And like his father, Agrippa II was educated in Rome. In AD 50, he was appointed king over a small fraction of his father's territories. He had some authority over Jerusalem and was allowed to appoint the high priest. Herod Agrippa II did a lot to advance the Hellenistic culture in his kingdom. When the Jewish revolt against Rome began in 66 AD, he tried to persuade his subjects not to fight the Romans. He fully supported Rome and even was wounded in the Battle of Gamla near Jesus' hometown of Capernaum. When the Romans finally defeated the Jewish rebels in this war, Agrippa II invited the legions to Caesarea Philippi to rest and to celebrate. In the 21st chapter of the book of Acts, the Roman commander of Jerusalem arrested Paul during a riot on the Temple Mount. And to make sure that Paul, a Roman citizen, received a fair trial and was not lynched by the angry mob, the officers sent him to Caesarea in Acts 24. The governor Felix, who was married to Agrippa's sister, Drusilla, she was a great-granddaughter of Herod the Great, and she was the daughter of Herod Agrippa I. I didn't put the women on the chart because it's so difficult to know where to put them. Their lives were so convoluted. They'd be married to one for a while and then married to another for a while, and they'd be, I wouldn't know where to put them on the chart. But Drusilla is an interesting character, the daughter of Agrippa I. The governor Felix left office before sentence was passed on Paul, but he was succeeded by Festus. When Agrippa II and his sister Bernice, who was another great-granddaughter of Herod the Great and a daughter of Agrippa I, when they came to Caesarea, Festus invited them to Paul's arraignment, as you know, in the 25th chapter of the book of Acts. Agrippa II asked if he could hear Paul's defense because he was interested in what Paul had to say. Both Bernice and Agrippa II heard from the lips of the Apostle Paul a ringing proclamation of the good news of the Messiah. Jesus of Nazareth was born near Herod the Great, who tried to kill him. He preached near Herod Antipas, who tried to kill him. He was tried by Herod Antipas, who sentenced him to die. He founded a movement of Jews and Gentiles who Herod Agrippa tried to kill. Festus thought Paul was mad. Agrippa II, even though fascinated with what Paul had to say, was not convinced and did not accept the gospel, and said that he was almost persuaded, but not quite. Acts 26, verse 28. He and Bernice determined that Paul was not guilty, but allowed him anyway to be sent to the Caesar in Rome, where Paul would eventually be killed. The point here about the Herod family is that one after another, the Herods knew or they met either Jesus or his followers. And one after another, they killed or tried to kill anybody that was connected with Jesus. These descendants of Esau were so close to Jesus and his followers, and yet they were so far away from them because their attitude was not right. They would not accept. This is the most powerful family of kings that Israel had known for many, many years, and they had every opportunity to meet and serve the King of the universe. But Herod the Great, Archelaus, Herod Philip, Herod Antipas, Herodias, Salome, Herod Agrippa II, Bernice, and Drusilla, they had opportunity, all 10 of them. Instead, they lived only for themselves, and today they exemplify the ultimate fate of everybody who rejects the Messiah. And that leads us down to the question of the hour. We've talked about a family here of very important people as men look at it, people who had wealth beyond most of their contemporaries, people who had every opportunity in life, who were around the Messiah and his followers and yet rejected the message because of their own personal family pride and their own thinking about their possibilities of how they would exercise their own power and wealth. What about those of us who are here today? We live in a wealthy country, as it's been pointed out a couple of times already in our meeting this morning. Are you so bound up in your own view of your life and your own personal possibilities that you too reject Jesus as the Messiah? Or, hearing his message, will you come to him in simple trusting faith? The Herod family I wanted to talk about because they serve as such a wonderful bad example for us. We don't need to repeat their mistake. We don't have to feel the fire to know that the fire is hot. These people were failures, all of them, in spite of the substance of their lives as it was viewed while they were on the earth. Every one of them failed to do the most important thing they had the opportunity to do in their life, and that was to accept Jesus as the Messiah. Will you fail on this, or will you accept Jesus as the Messiah? If you're outside of Christ today, we extend to you an invitation, an opportunity to repent of your sins, confess Jesus before men, be immersed in water for the remission of your sins. If this is your desire today and we can assist you, please let us know how we can help you by coming to the front as we stand and sing the closing number that's been announced.